Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm your tour guide of the day. To the right is your college campus.
I'm Ariana Giles. A while ago, I was driving around Fargo, North Dakota with some people I work with.
This is the library right here. You're gonna make a right right here.
I went to school here at North Dakota State University.
Yeah, there's like fraternity stuff. There's also a good coffee shop over there.
When I first came here, I was ready for that college life. Have a whole bunch of friends, have that new comforter. I wanted to join some clubs like the school newspaper and be an editor, or join the radio club and be a host of my own show. I was ready for the parties, and I was ready for the endless nights of homework. But the reality was different.
The only one syndrome is when you're literally the only Black one in your classes. And in this case, at my school, about 98% of your classes are predominantly white.
That's a video I made during my first semester. I started making videos to keep track of how I was feeling and to show people back home what school was like.
I'm here to get an education, but it's like, you can't ignore that. Being surrounded by whiteness is a thing. Like, it's a thing.
This is the Educate Podcast. I'm Ariana Giles, and I'm going to be telling you about my experience as a Black student on a mostly white campus. The challenges at North Dakota State weren't always about race, but it definitely was a part of it. It's like, how are you supposed to navigate it? Do you keep your head down and try to make the best of it? Or do you drop out and tell people it wasn't for you? What is college supposed to be like? I'm going to tell you what it took for me to answer those questions. I started making this podcast a while ago, and I had a lot of material. So I asked two colleagues here at American Public Media to come listen to this stuff with me and talk through it.
All right. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
I hear some weird static noises.
Yeah, that is some...
I think we're going into a different dimension.
That's Fiona Bowler.
North Dakota State.
And this is Sam Chu.
Dang. I've been on the campus.
North Dakota.
Ooh, we should have a podcast together, guys.
Yeah, no, this feels right.
I would totally do that.
Yeah.
So I wrote that this podcast is about my journey in finding the right college for me. And it's, like, very simple to say, but that's truly what it is, because I don't think that I have a traditional college experience.
I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, in a neighborhood called Frogtown. I grew up around all kinds of people, Somali, Hmong, white, Black. My neighborhood was full of color. And high school was no different. I was never the minority from K through 12. After high school, I took some classes at a community college. Students of color there made up more than half the school, and a full third were African American or Black. It was just as racially diverse as my high school. But I knew I wanted to move on to a four-year college. I wanted to study journalism. I wanted to go somewhere out of St. Paul and Minneapolis, but not too far. It needed to be affordable and have at least two Black people in the brochure. So I applied to North Dakota State, and I was accepted. So at my going-away party, it was like less than 10 of us, and we were all in the backyard.
Can you rewind this? Okay, you have timestamp on
this? My friend took this video on their phone. It was like in the summer, right at the beginning of August, and there's this moment where we're like, all right, Ariana, like basically I'm making a pledge to like commit myself to college. And so then they're like, all right, say, I, Ariana Giles. So I'm like, I, Ariana Giles.
So you say, I'm going to finish school.
I'm going to finish school.
I, Ariana Giles.
Yep. I eat money, Ariana Giles, Ariana Speaks, all those girls.
Oh.
I will finish school.
This was going to be evidence used against me if I wanted to drop out of college.
Okay, so when I'm in school and I say some dumb shit like, I'm not going to finish, I'm going to drop out, you can just show me this video, so...
All right, I'm about to tell y'all something real crazy, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, throw it down.
So the day I went up to tour was ultimately the day I decided where I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So Fargo, when I, like, toured there, when I first went there, still summer, right? So, like, very sunny. And then I went to NDSU, and I was like, this is in the movies. This is, like, bigger. This is, like, the buildings look more ancient, like... I'm like, this is akin to the like, you know, they're agriculture schools, so the grass was all green, and like, it was like, oh my God, I'm really going to college, like for real this time.
You thought you were going to be starring in your own coming of age movie.
Yeah, I thought I was about to live this whole movie life. Yeah, and I'm like, I'm about to have this clique of people.
Right.
I'm about to just, like, be me times 20. Mm-hmm. Like, but it wasn't like that.
How hard was the needle scratch when you were like, I'm going to live in a coming-of-age movie in Fargo, North Dakota as the only black girl that I can see for, like, I don't even know how many miles. Like,
see, I always get, like, crap about, like, people always kind of, like, raise their eyebrow at me, like, Ariana, North Dakota, why'd you go there? Do you know? Like, and I was like, no, I didn't know. It was like, I didn't think of Fargo as anything or any place, but just a place to, like, get on with my, like, education.
So, yeah, off to Fargo I went. Tuition there was cheap compared to other colleges, but I still had to take out a loan for it. Fargo was only 4 hours away, so if I wanted to go back home, I could just hop on a Greyhound bus and visit. But I didn't realize how often I would want to hop on that bus. So, like, when I first was there, it was bubbly, right? It was, like, the, like, school was just starting. Everybody's moving in. It's sunny. People are, like, doing that stuff in the movies, right? They're, like, on blankets outside.
Throwing
walking
frisbees.
With their friends. Yeah, throwing frisbees. Yeah. Like, everybody's having a good time. And I'm, like, damn, I did it. I'm here. Like, this is really happening. And then, y'all,
when October came, it was like,
you know, I came into the situation, you know, trying to thug it out, you feel me? I was like, it's cool. I'm about to take control of the situation. Like, it's fine or whatever. But, y'all, when I tell you the thug in me left so damn fast, and by the end of September, early October, your girl was depressed.
So that video is from my first video I made, and I called it Black Girl at Predominantly White College. So my classes, obviously, predominantly white. And in those classes, so I don't know how white people think, but, like, they think just if you're black, like, if your skin's brown, we're all the same. And it's like, we're not all the same. Mm-hmm. So I'd be in a class with, like, there'd be, like, me, white kids, and there'd be, like, a few, like, international students, or there'd be, like, an African student or two. So to me, I'm like, I don't have, like, they're not the same as me. Like, they have different, they're a different person than, like, they're from a different culture than I am. So.
Oh, yeah. There is these obstacles of people don't understand who you are. People don't understand your culture. People are making these presumptions about you that just don't make sense. Like, I always walked into the first day of class just wondering how many people were going to assume that I didn't know English because I'm Asian. And it's like the common assumption is that probably don't. Probably English second language. It was like, well, this is going to be a fun sociological experiment. But, like, we're living out these air quote fun sociological experiments all the time because we're always in that sample group.
I just keep thinking about my experience at school, too, and how similar that was. I went to, like, a small town in Wisconsin, and being the only person of color in a classroom and then having that subject or something around it be about race and then everyone turning and looking at you.
I have two things to say about that. One, just about even participating in class. I don't care. Okay, for the white listeners who, like, do school, like, the right way or whatever, I know I should be sitting in the front, so just disregard this whole thing, but, like, I like sitting in the back.
Yeah.
I don't like people sitting behind me. I want to see the whole room. Sorry, that's just, like, how I am. And so when there was times, like, when I did raise my hand, and yeah, because I was sitting in the back, but also it was, like, all these blue and green eyes, like, looked back at me.
Yeah.
Or if I did say something, I had to make sure I said something really intellectual or, like, really important.
Right.
I couldn't say something dumb because then they'd be like, oh, she's dumb. Like, you know, like, those were the thoughts that were going on with it. And then as far as my professors went, so I did have a cultural diversity class taught by a white person, which I thought was
totally cool.
I was like, I'm in this class and I am the diversity, so I don't know, like, why I'm in this class. Well, okay. And then I did have a day where we talked about the N-word in one of my sociology classes.
Yep. Been in that class.
I actually recorded the class for one of my videos.
Your sound on the end is never okay.
The professor was saying that adding the sound to the N-word is never okay.
Especially anyone whose skin is white.
Especially if you're white.
So at the same time, am I feeling weird, but I'm also, like, listening to the professor to see, like, she better not slip up talking about this.
Right.
Uh-huh.
What she gonna say?
No.
And did she keep, like, eyeballing you, like gut checking herself with you?
I mean, I think we were playing these, like, eye games with each other. Like, uh-huh. I would kind of, like, look down her way, and then she would kind of, like, brush the room, like, look over the room, and it was just, like, and I know she didn't want to specifically, like, look at me, but it definitely was awkward, and it was, like, I'm in this classroom being taught about something that I already know from the moment I'm born. Like, essentially. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the N-word is horrible. Like, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was like she was teaching it as if, like, today I'm going to teach you guys about why you shouldn't be using the N-word. And it was kind of bizarre to me. I'm like, why doesn't everybody know this? But I'm like, dang, I'm in this place and they don't know. But it was just, I just didn't want to be in the room with those conversations because they were already understood to me. And it was just like, I don't know.
Well, and I think there's, like, even a deeper conversation that could happen, but, like, there's no way that you could even get deeper if the majority of the people in the room don't even have the concept that saying the N-word is bad.
And I don't have all the answers, right? Like, it was, like, in those discussions, especially in diversity class, the teacher asked the awkward, like, question that nobody really wants to answer. Like, in their case, they didn't know the answer to. So it was, like, he was like, so Ariana, what do you think? I don't have the answers for you, sir.
I don't know. I'm here to learn, too.
Yeah, like two things. It feels like you can never stop repping.
Mm-hmm.
Like you always have to represent your whole people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or everyone who's not white all the time. Or everyone who's, in my instance, anyone who's kind of yellow, though I've been mistaken for being for Latin American or Mexican or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then like always feeling like you, always have to represent. But then always having to, like, be the best example of who you are all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But like, answering the questions. I always had to make sure I said something smart.
Being the teacher, too. Being, like, literally, like, having to educate your professors about things or feeling like that's put on you in some way.
Yeah, it was the first time in life where I really had to watch myself all the time.
Yeah.
That's exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, that is so exhausting. I mean, you can't help but be depressed because you can't be yourself, like, anywhere you go. And then you feel kind of weird, like, who am I? What am I doing? Like, all the, then those rabbit holes come. But ultimately, I had to, like, suck it up and put my head down because I needed to stay there for that school year.
Mm-hmm.
That's my old apartment by that bush. I made this recording standing outside my old dorm building. Lester used to live there on that bush, my little cricket. I lived on the first floor, and outside my window was this bush. So when I came here, it was very nice, right? Like, green grass, like, sun was shining. I had went to that farmer's market and got a lavender plant and a vine plant. And then, like, I had my little setup, so on my by my window, on my ledge, I had my lavender plant, like, vine. And I noticed there was a cricket outside my window. Like, every day, this cricket would be, like, going crazy, like, not even at night. And I was like, I'm gonna name my cricket Lester.
I'd make jokes like, Lester had me up all night, or Lester won't shut up.
And so then I had a pet, I had my plants, I was like ready for school. And then like 3 weeks later, overcast came, it was cold, and Lester was gone.
My baby, my only friend, my lavender plant died too. It was like everything was dying on me. And life in the dorm wasn't great either. My three roommates were white. We all had our own rooms, but we shared a kitchen and a bathroom.
This was my first time living with people, like, white people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was little things like hair.
Hair?
Hair. So when you take shower, you know, it's like this okay thing to leave hair in the shower. But you know, if I left hair in the shower, that little curly piece, you know who that's from. So we are at a hair store. It's like the only black store in Fargo, hair store, black beauty supply hair store in Fargo that I know of.
While I was working on this podcast, I visited some old familiar places in Fargo. I sat in the car outside the hair store and I made this recording.
One time I asked my roommates if they could, on our way home from like a store like Target or something, I was like, can you guys, do you mind if we stop at this hair store so I can get some products for my hair? I did ask before I got the car, I said, do you guys want to come in? They're like, no, we'll just like stay in the car. And it was like, okay. So I went in, like got the stuff I needed and it came out. And it was kind of just like a weird moment. Like, I have to like
go do what I gotta do just for my cultural needs. And they're like making it yet again another awkward experience. And it's just like, I'm just trying to get some like grease from my hair, some hair oil or something, or some weave. Like,
and it was like, what? Like, this is your opportunity to,
yeah, just have this experience.
Yeah. And it wasn't that big to me. Like, we're going in a store, you're gonna see fake hair.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a purchase and we're going to be outies.
Yeah. Well, it's this constant, like, I don't want to make you uncomfortable with my existence, but, right, like, why does my existence make you uncomfortable in the first place?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, if you can't do this one little thing with me.
Yeah.
Just sitting outside the hair store made me remember how lonely I was in Fargo, even when I was with other people like my roommates.
They were never willing to, like, truly get to know me, you know? Like, I don't even think they know what's technically what city I'm from. They're just like, oh, she's from the cities. Like, they would not be able to tell you specific things or characteristics about me that I know, like, about them, that kind of stuff. It seemed like, in general, like, it was easier for me to conform with them and, like, be, like, how they are, just so everything can go, whatever. But if it was the other way around, like, it probably would have been more hard for them. But, like, it's just, like, they have to understand, it's hard for me. I may just be keeping a straight face about it, but, like, behind my closed door, I'm, like, crying about it in my room.
You know when you go to college and you think your roommates might be your best friends? It was like, well, not gonna happen, so I gotta go out there and make my own.
I'm Burley Holder. NDSU alumni and photographer, videographer, filmmaker, screenwriter.
Burley was one of my first friends at NDSU. He also was my first Black friend on campus.
Talking with him, I found out that he was from the same place as me, so I grew up in Frogtown. He was like, I'm from Frogtown too. I was like, get out. I'm like,
finally, I found my peace.
Yeah, right. I'm like, what?
Burley was in his last semester at North Dakota State when we met. He helped me make my first video, and he took me to my first Black Student Association meeting. A good meeting had about 40 students. A bad meeting, in the wintertime, had about 20. If you're Black on that campus and you don't go to the one place where Black people meet, you are not even trying to have a close to normal experience for yourself. On Sundays, Burley and our other four friends from BSA would make dinner together and study together. I found my people. Kind of. Burley stuck it out at North Dakota State, and he graduated last year.
I came here with a mission that I just wanted this degree, and I wanted to get out as soon as possible. It was very to the point with me, and I sort of had the blinders up for a lot of my ways here. Did I ever really feel uncomfortable and such like that? And I mean, yeah, it was, it's, I always felt like an outsider here, but like, except for some fair, like, you know, a few places like say BSA, or like you find your own little community of, you know, and yeah, they ended up usually being other Black people, but I'm gonna be honest with you, I hated nearly every moment of being inside NDSU. There was like a few people that I enjoyed spending time with and such like that, but yeah, I did not enjoy my time here. I felt trapped, I felt very lonely, and so I was just like, brain turns near off and just sort of like moving through it.
Burley was a theater major. The theater majors spent a lot of time together, but he had a rough time becoming close with them, especially when he asked them to hang out.
I got either no's or nah, can't, busy. So, and I don't know, nobody's busy 100% of the time. That's always, busy is a choice. But yeah, all the times it was just no. And so I just said, screw it. I'm gonna just hang with the people that I hang with, which ended up being mainly Black students up until sort of literally my last year, where I wasn't, I don't know, treated as some sort of social pariah.
And Burley was exposed to more overt racism than I was.
I was telling him earlier, I haven't had any like actual racist like moments. Obviously, I felt like things, like, you know, like I got a sense of like racism, but no, I never was like, nah.
You know what's crazy to me? That you didn't, because I remember one of my first days or weeks here, it was me and my cousin, we were walking down, and somebody, like, drove past me and said the N-word. And I was like, they didn't even get out the car. Like, if I didn't have, like, really good ears, I probably would have just missed that. I was like, you wasted your energy. I was on campus at that time. Yeah, it was, I don't know. I find these things funny just because, I don't know, through life experiences, you make light of nearly everything.
Burley's tone about everything is, like, he's, like, laughing at everything. Like, you can clearly hear that. And so, like, that was one of the things that, like, makes me not like that place or like those kinds of environments, because they make you think that those things are funny or, like, acceptable.
Yeah, I was totally that dude.
Laugh it off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I guess I laugh, too. But I think Burley adapted to a new normal at North Dakota State that just never seemed normal to me.
I don't know. I don't want to put all the blame on race because I'm, as I said, I'm a unique case. I'm a bad person to talk to because I am, like, it's all about, especially when it comes to something like school, I'm paying to be here, so I need to get something worth, you know? I have to, like, feel like, all right, I got value out of that. And a lot of times it felt like just turning my gears, not going anywhere. And it's like I'm doing a lot for nothing. And I'm doing it with people that, with no help, with, yeah, solo dolo.
He kept trying to meet people halfway. You kept trying to meet people halfway, but then they would never meet you where you needed to go.
Right. It was like,
where you needed to be.
Yeah. It was like, I'm not going to be okay with you just like, not trying your hardest to, where at some point there was a cutoff for him, I think, with people, and he just accepted it, but I never accepted it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because I'm like, I don't know, this is just not my, like, way of life. So then, like, I'm walking around every day still trying to, like, be happy, right? I'm like, I'm out here, like, you know? And then it was like, nah, girl, you not. And you in a small town, so there's no escaping it. Mwah!
Because, like, we got you now.
Because it was like, at least when I went to a two-year, you know, I was bouncing between two worlds, the school world and the real world. So once I left that building, I was on some other stuff, could interact with other people, could, like, just do my thing and then go back there every week. But there, I was, like, there 24-7, like, the same people, the same routine. Like, it was not good. But then a lot of people, too, in my position as these, like, non-traditional, like, first-gen students, like, you don't know what you're supposed to do.
No.
Like, you don't have the guidance. You go to a counselor, or you go to some, you know, you go to a professional on campus or whoever, a professor, and it's always like the checklist of things that you have to do. And it was like at that point, I went to see a therapist. I picked some better classes that I would like. I went to clubs, like, I worked out a little bit. I did what I was supposed to do on that list to make my experience good. And then it was like, okay, after the list, I'm throwing the list back at you. And it's just like, now what? Like, I wasn't getting the guidance that I needed to, like, survive there, I guess. So by May, I was pretty burnt out. Like, y'all should see when I came home, I was crusty, okay? I got up out of there. Woo! I was ashy. I was just dry. It looked like. But anyway, as soon as I came home in May, I was like, I'm not going back there. Because, of course, when you come home, people, like, talk to you. How was it? And all these things. And I never said anything good about it. Not that good things didn't happen, but overall, like, that wasn't, my response wasn't good. So I was like, yeah, this is obvious. I'm not going back there.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of like clear as day, I think.
Okay, did you, like, take this as a failure? Did you feel defeated in any way? And, like, or how did you view not going back to NDC? Or was this kind of like a triumph? Like, how did you?
I felt like I wasted time up there. Even though I may have had all these different experiences that could help, that helped me now as a person. But, like, I wasted a whole year of my life, like, and especially not even feeling comfortable and kind of, like, breaking down as a person. So I was like, all right, this is what I got to do.
I spent the summer plotting my next move. I couldn't go to another college that required me to take out another loan. I was going to need to finish college, get the job of my dreams, and pay back the loans I had already taken out. I also didn't want to live on campus again, so that meant wherever I went, I needed to find an apartment and a way to pay for it. I wanted to be in a city, but not totally distracted, and I didn't want to be the only Black one on my campus. It felt like I shouldn't have went to North Dakota State in the first place, that I should have stayed on that commuter-style school life. All that, like, movie stuff, I was like, yo, I don't got time for it. I didn't waste the time. Now it's, like, grind time, and I got to put my head down. I just took out all these loans, not trying to do that again. And the closest thing to me, because I ended up moving back to St. Paul, was, like, I'm just going to go to Metro community-style college, which I'm familiar with, and it's definitely affordable.
Not going to lie, so it's kind of cool having my little backpack on. I got a little notebook in here, you know.
That's me on the bus to my first day at Metro State. It's a 4-year state school in St. Paul. Metro is a commuter school with students who are of many ages and backgrounds with whole lives and jobs outside of school. I started classes in August. I'm majoring in creative writing. I started with 2 classes, Intro to Creative Writing and a Gender, Race, and Pop Culture course. Both my teachers were white, but the students were diverse in age, ethnicity, all that. And for the first time, I was being assigned to read tons of Black authors.
But today I'm going to do a presentation on Toni Morrison. And if you don't know my name by now, it's Ariana.
I didn't feel awkward in class. I wasn't the only one of my kind, and I didn't have to be there 24/7. It all started feeling more my speed and organic again, and not so damn difficult to navigate.
So I just grabbed a couple random quotes from her that I personally like. Like, if there's a book you want that you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it.
And it wasn't until my first semester I did at Metro State where college finally started to feel more right. My definition of what a college experience is supposed to be like has changed. It's not supposed to be like anything. It's definitely not supposed to make you feel like you have to change everything about you as a person to make it work. Multiple loans, moving, having no idea what I was doing, and 3 colleges later, I have now started my own definition. It's about feeling supported in your environment. It's about being comfortable in class. And it's about being brave and advocating for yourself when something doesn't feel right. I mean, yeah, there's some things about college that's still, like, a little confusing to me or trying to navigate it, but ultimately, like, I feel like now I've had the experiences to know that I can finish this thing. Well, thank you, Sam and Fiona, for coming in and talk to me about this, and it definitely does feel good walking away from this feeling validated in my experiences and just in my truth about my college life, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, this Black girl will graduate, but the way she wants to, okay?
Right on.
See ya. All right, y'all, that's it for this episode. Please tell us what you think. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Educate Podcast, or you can send us a note to contact@apmreports.org. This episode was reported and produced by me, Ariana Giles, and Alex Baumhart, Chris Julin, and Sabby Robinson. It was mixed by Veronica Rodriguez. And special thanks to my homies Fiona Bowler, Sam Chu, John Hernandez, Lauren Brown, Marcel Malikibu, and Max Nesterak. We partner with the Hechinger Report, a nonprofit independent news organization focused on inequality and innovation in education. Support for APM Reports comes from Illumina Foundation and the Spencer Foundation. Thanks for listening. This is APM.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.